A long-neglected issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women is starting to attract more attention. In Washington state, lawmakers are considering a cold case task force for Native American women who have gone missing. And California is launching what it calls a Feather Alert system, similar to the Amber Alert system, to notify people when Indigenous women go missing. And there is a new docuseries. It just premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, and it's streaming this weekend on Showtime. It's called Murder in Bighorn.
There are so many different possibilities for what happened to these murdered and missing Indigenous women in Bighorn County. Is it a hypothermia death? Is it a beating, drug-related, trafficking? We have all the questions in the world, and we don't have the answers.
We have on the line two directors of this film, Rozelle Benally and Matthew Galkin. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
So to begin, what is the scale of this problem of Indigenous women gone missing and found murdered?
The scale is vast. It's in all of North America. You know, we chose Bighorn County, Montana, because it is sort of an epicenter of this problem within the United States that has one of the highest concentrations of missing and murdered cases in the country. You know, when Rozelle and I started trying to figure out how to put a human face onto this issue, we ultimately focused in on that area.
Rozelle, to focus on specific human faces, your film focuses on a few of them, just to illustrate the challenges families and communities have to get answers from law enforcement. I wonder if you can talk about the case of Henny Scott and what it reveals about what is happening systemically, what might be happening. She was 14, disappeared, and her body was found in 2018.
Yeah, so Henny being such a young girl and this all happening on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, she is an example of basically law enforcement negligence and how much that happens in the community. When Henny's mother went to go report the case, the missing persons report sat on the desk as the holidays happened. And that's a critical time period in a missing persons case. What is known of Henny's case is the manner and the cause of death, which is accidental hypothermia. And unfortunately, however, the way Henny's body was discovered has abrasions, possible burn marks, and some disfigurement of her nose. So that raises a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm. Can you give a couple of examples of how families are not getting basic information from law enforcement in these cases?
Henny's mother and stepfather filing a missing persons case and it sitting on a desk for 2 weeks before anyone actually dealt with it. I mean, the deep negligence there, obviously 2 weeks in a missing persons case is a huge amount of time. You know, Kaysera's grandmother, you know, would drive over 100 miles every day in the days immediately following the discovery of Kaysera's body just to get answers from the sheriff's office, just to get someone to talk to them. And they couldn't do it. They could not get even the basic information of even where is Kaysera's body. They didn't actually alert the family to this. It was 2 weeks later that they finally identified Kaysera to the family, yet they knew who it was the entire time. So very, very sort of bizarre inconsistencies to these investigations.
And Rozelle, can you talk a little bit more about the kind of the basics of Kaysera's case? Matthew mentioned that they weren't even notified for days what was happening. They also cremated her body without the family's permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Kaysera went missing. A body turned up in a backyard. And word, because it's a small community, word traveled fast that there was a body. And so Kaysera's family called in to try to get information to confirm it, that that was her. And they didn't get back to her for a while. And they couldn't say anything or confirm anything because of the condition of the body when it was found. finally, they had to go into dental records to confirm that was her. So, you know, I can't imagine.
Yeah. One key voice in your series is a former law enforcement official, a non-Native person. And Matthew, I wonder what you learn about law enforcement in this part of the country. Its willingness to be transparent, what it says, what it doesn't say, how protective it is of its own.
You know, our team tried for over a year to get the current Bighorn County Sheriff's Office to sit for interviews. Ultimately, they declined to participate. We also hounded the ex-undersheriff of Bighorn County for over a year. And because he had moved out of the state of Montana, he was willing to sit for an interview because he wasn't fearful of the retribution anymore. So, you know, he was very direct in his views on policing the Native American population in that area. And he even goes so far as to say that he doesn't think that the issue of MMIW, of missing and murdered Indigenous women, is real. He thinks it's just completely made up. And that was a startling thing to hear someone say in an interview.
What does he mean by made up? I also stopped and stared when I heard him say that.
Well, I take that to mean he doesn't think there's a there. He doesn't think any of these things are related, that they're all random acts, that a lot of young Native women just freeze to death, are found face down dead, as if Native women either just disappear or they just drop dead.
Yeah. One of the big challenges you lay out is jurisdiction in this area. Your documentary does a good job laying this out.
And so to figure out who has jurisdiction at any given time, you have to know who's the victim, are they Indian or not? Who is the perpetrator, are they Indian or not? Where did the crime occur, on Indian land or not? When it comes to violence against Native women, when it comes to missing and murdered situations, oftentimes we don't know where she went missing. We don't know who the perpetrator is. And so I think oftentimes law enforcement are going to say, well, we don't have jurisdiction, or we don't know if we have jurisdiction, so take it over there. So it just falls through the cracks. And we end up really being almost a lawless community.
Rizelle, how does this jurisdiction issue contribute to lawlessness, as the film says? What's the connection here?
That is one of the major issues when a Native woman goes missing, and it's done so by a non-Native perpetrator. Who's going to investigate it? This jurisdiction issue allows law enforcement to just pass off the case as if it's a hot potato between the different agencies. Nobody's taking them up. And that's the problem.
Hmm. Yeah. So Matthew, what are the possibilities of what happened to these women? How real are the possibilities that they were abducted for human trafficking, abducted for being involved in drug trafficking?
Certainly in some of them, that is a very real possibility. And they may have died of hypothermia, but it's ultimately the factors that lead up to them being put in those positions to be out alone in a frozen field in the middle of winter. Are they running from something? That is the big mystery, and that ultimately is something that a proper investigation would have hopefully yielded an answer to, but we just don't know.
Rizelle, as a Native American filmmaker, I wonder what working on this particular project means to you.
I ended up carrying a lot of weight of these cases and what these families had to go through. So I had to understand that my strong spiritual grounding and my cultural background with ceremony was imperative to uphold throughout the whole process of this.
Matthew, finally, I wonder what your hope for this docuseries is. There isn't always satisfying resolution to these cases. There's such striking sadness, sometimes a sense of hopelessness. What do you want the viewer to take from this?
You know, Rizelle and I knew pretty clearly early on that these most likely were not cases that were going to be solved within the window that we were making this documentary, but probably ever, because the investigations were so mishandled originally. So the idea of the ending for us becomes, it's more of an arrival at a realization for the viewer, which is that this isn't a standard true crime story. This is really a story about the true crime being, you know, the history of colonization, something that goes back hundreds of years and set forward a tidal wave of issues that ultimately created a perfect storm within Native communities that put Native women in such a vulnerable situation.
Matthew Galkin and Rizal Banali are directors of Murder in Bighorn, a docuseries that starts streaming this weekend on Showtime, and it just premiered at Sundance. Rizal, Matthew, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.